Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everyone. This is Catherine Dean, the host of the Hype Girl podcast, and you're listening to your favorite blockhead podcast. Where else can you find a show that combines a passion for the Peanuts comic strip and mixed martial arts? Well, that's what you can expect from the host, Brian, as you sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for an entertaining ride. Now, let's start the show.
Since I have said these words, it feels so good to be back at it, broadcasting live. Good evening, Blockhead Nation. Thank you for tuning in once again. You are listening to your favorite Blockhead, the only podcast in the podcasting world that can somehow incorporate the Peanuts comic strip 1 minute and then be talking about MMA and warriors inside the octagon the next. I am your host. My name is Brian Little, and from the bottom of my heart, I thank all of you for allowing me to take 2 weeks to be able to grieve. Those that are new listeners and don't know, our family got hit with COVID. We all had to quarantine. We ended up coming at the back end. But unfortunately, COVID got the best of my father's physical body. And on January 14th, he was called home to his eternal home. And we needed to have time to grieve. I needed to have time to just focus on family affairs. And all of you stuck around and you gave love. You said, take as long as you need. And guys, I've been excited to get back into it. And I wanted to start off with somebody that I trusted to be able to get back into my groove, jump back in the podcasting world with you. And before I start, if you listen to the beginning of this episode, you heard Miss Kat from the Hype Girl podcast give me a very special intro. Thank you for that, Miss Catherine. We'll be sending people your way in the blog. All the links are going to be there today. Also, because of a unanimous decision from the YFB Network, I'm going to go ahead and say it now. We have a surprise. A new addition to the YFB Network. Drum roll, please. The Tables, Ladders, and Gimmicks podcast. Little Wesley, I don't want to call him little, but young man, an 11-year-old who knows professional wrestling. You were won over by the YFB Network. It was unanimous decision. You are now officially part of the network, and I know everybody's happy about that. We had a quick Zoom meet. I asked him about your podcast. Everybody said, yes, give him the go-ahead. So now the Tables, Layers, and Gimmicks podcast is officially part of the YFB Network. So we're looking forward to some great content out of Wesley and Drew Turner. And we'll be seeing some others that are coming up. Some of y'all are still waiting in the wings. I know you're anxious, but we will get to you in due time. Now that we've got that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, it has been too long since my friend has come and joined me at the brick wall. And he is finally here, just like Charlie Brown and Lyons would meet up and pick up right where they left off. That's exactly where we are. We have in the house Mr. Kevin Brother Sin Sinir. Brother Sin, what's the money on it, Hoss?
How you doing, my man? How you doing?
You know, I expected you to get more of a pop out of that because you understand that line. I think at the end of this episode, we might need to walk people through the catchphrase of what's the money on it, Hoss, and give due diligence to its proper author. We're going to have to do that one at this point.
Oh, boy.
But
to save
that for towards the end and kind of get into a little bit of the family. It's been a while since we've been able to talk. You've been a busy man. Now, give us an update just on the family. I mean, how are the kids and how is the dad doing? How's Miss Stacy? How you guys been doing over there in Ohio, buddy?
Yeah, we've been doing well. Obviously, as with everybody, the last year was unique in every way. So, you know, with my business, you know, we shut down temporarily, worked remote, and then ended up going back fairly soon just because it was fairly low risk. We didn't have a lot of customer-facing interactions retail-wise. So that was pretty good. We made out okay. The kids, you know, weren't thrilled with the – in Ohio here, at least in our district, we did the homeschooling, the e-learning from March 15th to the end of the year. So that was tough for them. With Miss Stacy working, you know, full time, and you know, so teaching, trying to combine all that. That was rough. The end of the year was kind of chaotic. We had a good summer, did a lot of things, you know, despite everything still being closed. And then luckily they got to go back. Their school opened up as normal first of the year. They our district here did a hybrid option. You could either be in school, you could do e-learning, or you could do a hybrid, which is kind of a mess talking to the teachers, where the kids can literally come and go as they please. So the high school teachers are not liking it because the kids can come one class once a week and then just say, all right, I'm going home, and that's legit. So as long as, I guess, assignments are getting turned in. But so we're good. They've been back in school. We've had fairly minimal exposure to cases in our school district. The high school obviously had the most because that's, I guess, where they're finding the most in any schools.
Sure.
But they've had no they shut down 2 weeks early at Christmas because they ramped up a little bit in cases and they weren't thrilled, but they started back as normal. Everything's good. They're healthy. In basketball right now for the two older ones. Ari, the little two-year-old, she's a little Tasmanian devil. She's great. Keeps us all entertained. And little man, you know, he's getting by. He's got his struggles. You know, with his autism, he's full blown in the midst of that. And he goes to a special integrated preschool 4 afternoons a week where they work with him on some speech stuff and some occupational therapy and helping him kind of normalize with the social stuff in hopes that, you know, when time comes for kindergarten, he might be ready for that. So, but otherwise physically, they're all healthy as can be. Stacy and I are very healthy. I think we all had COVID briefly before it was really a thing in March. I think they all had it last winter, but since we've had no cases in the house, nobody's gotten it. She works full time in a medical clinic, and you know, knock on wood, thank God, she hasn't gotten any exposure, no cases. So we've been very fortunate. So things are good. Busy as always with having four of them and us working, but it's good. It's a good life. We're doing well. God has blessed us even throughout the last year, so can't complain at all.
Definitely so. God bless Miss Stacy as she's going out there and doing her thing every single day. She's always in our prayers. Amen. And yes, the trooper that is Little Chael. This is not to label anything, but those that don't know, Kevin's son Chael has been diagnosed with autism. But the truth is that makes him more unique, makes him more special to this world. And it's also something that, you know, we have to more adjust instead of he has to adjust. But we are thrilled that this he is such a blessing. And the little redhead girl's always got him in his in her thoughts. You know, she's always available.
Thank you.
Exactly. Any updated stories on the Kevin Brotherson Senior, as in your father? How's he doing these days?
Yeah, they're doing okay. Again, they've being in their mid 60s. They've been fortunate enough that neither of them have gotten any exposure or gotten any of the cases, so they've been lucky. Especially my mom being 65, three of the younger people that worked in her group and her accounting department, her office, and my dad, who was working maintenance full time in nursing homes, which is, you know, kind of worst place to be with all this, was able to avoid getting it up till now. And because of that, and because of kind of the downturn in the business with that corporate nursing home company, they both completely and fully retired at the end of November. So now they're in about month two of full retirement and trying to figure out what that means for them and fill their days. And but they're very happy, and they're healthy, and they're doing well. They're enjoying everything so far.
Can also say they've hit the magic number. I mean, 65 is a special time period. If it's not one thing, it could be Medicare. I mean, it's got some perks that come along with that we will know maybe in due time unless history changes everything.
Yep.
So to ask you about how where you're going as far as career goes, you've been in the insurance world for quite a while. You know it inside out, backwards and forwards. And finally, congratulations to you. Mm-hmm. You've opened up your own business to be able to help everybody in the community with their insurance needs. But I got to ask you something, and I'm going to let you just roll with this. At a time like this, being a small business owner, I'm letting you kind of let the Blockhead Nation know, what are some things that the public needs to understand when it comes to not just the COVID pandemic, but as in, yes, I'm throwing it out there because I'm not going to get political. I don't mind if you do. The changing of the guard and the new inauguration of a new president that has different philosophies. I think this is a good chance for you, who has your hands in the trenches and has your own small business. What is something that we, the public, need to understand about moving forward in 2021 and the next 4 years?
Yeah, so last year was rough with the pandemic as a small business owner.
Right.
You know, so I owned prior, but it was more of a franchise type business with State Farm, which, as you mentioned, I since resigned from them in May, and now I'm an independent agent. So I'm completely on my own,
selling
for a variety of companies, but having a lot more freedom. But in insurance, we're fairly insulated with the shutdowns because we weren't a restaurant that couldn't have consumers. We weren't a gym that couldn't have paying customers come in. We had to say our business necessarily don't have to be face to face, luckily.
Sure.
So, and it's still a requirement. They didn't up and say, okay, you no longer have to carry auto liability insurance because of the pandemic shutdown. So that income wise, the business, we did okay. We were fairly insulated that way. But unfortunately, many of the other small businesses, we saw many in our area, even in Ohio, we weren't one of the states that had the real severe outbreak, but bad enough that restaurants were closed, the stores were closed, the small mom and pop retail shops were closed, and many of them, even in this area, didn't open back up. And unfortunately, and I'm not taking anything away from the virus, the pandemic, because it's real, it's affecting people,
sure,
your family. It's certainly nothing to mess around with, but I do feel that they didn't handle it properly.
Okay.
I mean, you're a history expert. When in modern history was it ever proper protocol that you quarantined the healthy? Isn't it always that you quarantine the ill, the at risk, the sick, and allow the healthy population to continue living and help eradicate it that way? The way this was handled spun it completely on its axis, and it just caused so many problems for society, for business, for, you know, you read all the studies where, you know, teenage suicide rates and stuff are way up because people being depressed. They don't have that socialization. They're not in the school to have that support network. I don't feel that they handled it properly. And it was, and I hate saying it, but it seems so much of it was much a political agenda. They wanted, you know, one party so much more than anything else in the world wanted the other party not to be there any longer. So I feel that they acted in a way to make that happen. And I don't, and as we're seeing now, as soon as the election and the changing of the guard, you know, Chicago indoor dining is now open. Things, that's okay. Every restrictions are lifted. Michigan, restrictions are lifted. Detroit, we can have indoor dining. California, now all of a sudden, Governor Newsom, we can lift the restrictions. We can go back to life. Like, immediately, like the stats changed that quickly, you know, a week after the inauguration, that we can all of a sudden do this, that for a year it was, you can't do anything. So I just don't feel they handled it properly for us as a society. And I think it fractured small business, and it created a divide in an environment where so many people lost so much that was unnecessary. People lost their livelihoods, their fortunes, everything they put into it. Luckily, they had some programs that some people like myself were able to benefit from. And, you know, I'm honest, I got a PPP loan, which was small because I didn't have a huge payroll, but I got something for that. I got an EID, an emergency income from the SBA. So I got some funding. Ohio instituted their own grant that was, you know, no strings, no payback, just a straight grant for 50 businesses per county. And I was luckily able to get online at the right time and do that. So, you know, luckily there are some resources there to help those that were fortunate.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Enough to get those to help.
Sure.
you know, sustain and get by. Otherwise, you know, I've been on Facebook groups and stuff where people trying to navigate that process, and people from all over the country of all different businesses that just are waiting months and months and months, and their applications for that kind of stuff are just sitting in limbo and, you know, not getting through. And, you know, they've since lost business and they lost income and they can never recover from that. So I'm hoping that this new administration, as much as I hate to say it, I hope it was political in their actions, because it's in the past and we can't change it. I hope that it was political in that now they change how things going forward. Even if we see another spike or a new strain, that they handle it differently and it's not so devastating to the population as a whole, because there was just too much. Last year was just a powder keg of
right.
between the shutdown and then, you know, the George Floyd thing and everything that happened. It was just a year unlike anything else. And,
yeah,
you know, this political regime, I hope, you know, I'm not a fan of it, but it's there now. We have to support them. And I just hope there's not so much division created by the conservative side the way that we had last year from the two parties. You know, we just need to move forward. And, you know, we're fairly insulated here in Ohio because this is a conservative Republican county. Most of the state we voted Republican. So there's not diversity, but we're not Detroit. We're not LA. We're not New York.
Sure.
We're not a huge melting pot. So we're fairly insulated from those problems because we're not real urban. We don't see any of that stuff day to day. So we're lucky in that sense. So I just feel horrible for the cities and the people that went through that. I mean, downtown Cleveland had a little bit of rioting with businesses destroyed. So I just hope that's something that we never have to go through again. And I hope the new administration has a plan to help alleviate and mitigate all that and make sure that, you know, we don't deal with it anymore, because people coast to coast need to get back to their daily lives and get back to some normalcy, because you go too long and they'll never return to normal. People will change, and, you know, I don't want to see that. So
yeah, and to kind of piggyback on everything, you're right. When it comes to pandemics, I'm not a doctor, I am a historian. And when I look at this, you were right about the whole country didn't quarantine like that. Yeah, the ones that were diagnosed would be. There are some cases that are a little different than things like World War II with the yellow fever, when you had the soldiers going to the battle. And that's kind of another case-by-case basis that happens with these. But this has been strange, and this has really been so detrimental. And I'm this is coming from me, from a personal standpoint, from my family. Don't think this is morbid. Again, I'm grieving the loss of my father, but when you have six of us that were able to get past this and are able to move forward in our daily lives, and it's kind of one of those, if it had to fall on anybody else, if I was in dad's shoes, I'd be like, hey, if it's going to happen to anybody, it needs to happen to me. You know, there's kind of that belief of the male always goes before the female. That's kind of a normal thing. That was of his culture. But I kind of throw that as a percentage. I'm like, that's over 80% plus of people that do get past this and move on with their lives. Stop living in fear. Stop believing everything the news tells you. Learn how to think for yourself and learn how to do your own research. And then finally, just make your own decision. Use some critical thinking. And we are in agreement on everything you shared. I mean, just in different geolocations in so many ways. So bring it to a fun fact. I mean, we could always go back into that another day, and I'm sure people will have feedback. We'll find out what the Blockhead Nation says. But I got to get something off my chest at this point that's never been solved. Are you and I still in a comic strip war? Because there's no convincing you that Calvin and Hobbes is taking a back seat to the Peanuts, even though there's longevity there and world-renowned, the world knows who Snoopy is, and we have an animated movie. I just want to know, are we still kind of at odds when it comes to the comic strip Calvin and Hobbes versus Peanuts?
Watterson for life. That's all I got to say.
I knew you would say Bill Watterson on that one. And again,
Watterson.
Yeah, and the truth is, I'm going when you narrow it down, there is no comparison between the two of these. It's just
vastly different styles. I mean,
yeah,
Peanuts, like you said, the longevity, just more wholesome, just a completely different tone and stylistic theme than.
Yeah,
Calvin and Hobbes, just the sardonic wit and the sarcasm and the,
yes,
you know, Peanuts had some of it, but with Calvin having the full, you know, adult emotional quotient, you know, the mentality in the
right.
in the child body and just so vastly different and brilliant in their own ways. So
sure.
It's one of those Jordan LeBron things, you know, the different eras, different. You'll never convince, you know, opposing views that the other is correct, but they can coexist in the pantheon of greatness.
Even if we're the only ones talking about it, I would never have thought of MJ versus LeBron in any way between the comic strips, but you just solidified that on here, buddy.
Yeah. I can read the Calvin and Hobbes books over and over and over and just,
right,
you know, roll laughing. It gets to me. Like I said, just the sardonic adult sarcasm and wit in the little, you know, the little hellion's body.
You know, it's kind of a shame that we don't have that comparison. Maybe one day we'll get somebody who will make the Calvin and Hobbes animated movie. Maybe we'll be able to say, okay.
I thought for a long time with everything else they do animated now with Netflix and everything else with all the animated series they have. I'm really shocked that somebody hasn't come up with an animated series, whether it be Netflix, and, you know, unfortunately a lot of those are a little crude and whatnot, but having that kind of leeway and putting, you know, the Calvin type personality on screen, I would thought for certain by now somebody would have and done that. And that's my hope at some point. A movie would be great, but to see an ongoing series would, right. Yeah.
I mean, it's still timeless and still befitting. And I'm sitting there going, what's the hold up on it as well? I can't figure out what the hold up on it, but I can say this, you know, time will come, you and I'll always have my peanuts. You have your Calvin and Hobbes. I read some, you read the other one. You're right. We know how to be cordial. And it's just kind of one of those at the end of the day, is it something worth causing a divide over? Of course not. But I can ask you this one. We have one other interest that you and I are overly interested in. And this is what some of my listeners have been tuning in for this moment. I do want to jump right into UFC 257, but I can't. Because there's one guy that's on the edge of my lips that I have to discuss with you, who is already being talked about as a possible performance of the year. I've got to know what your take on is on the career and the early January 2021 version of one Max Holloway. Is there anything that you can say that would make anybody dislike this guy?
Absolutely not. I mean, just incredible. The pace that he pushes, it just blows me away. You know, and it's been talked about multiple times on Rogan and Chael show and everything else. He's now got like 1, 2, 3 and number 4 of the most shots landed in any fight. Most, you know, headshots, that kind of thing. It's just unbelievable. And Calvin Kattar is an incredible fighter in his own right.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just being lost in the conversation because Max did such an otherworldly thing. It's being lost at how great, you know, Calvin is, and that whole thing is kind of being tossed away because Max was just, like I said, otherworldly. And to be able to go in there and move like that and throw that many punches, unbelievable. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen a performance like that where somebody from bell to bell can
it brings up the question, like kind of like Chael would say sometime, you know, he says it on his show a couple of times, how good is this guy? How good is that? We're asking the question in 2021, just how good is Max Holloway? And like you said, Kattar is no easy night out. You are so right. I'm just glad that you see what I see with him.
Yeah, and coming off two losses to come back like that, you know, maybe you know, a lot of people will talk about maybe he won the fight, the last one. Or a draw, and you shouldn't have lost. But still, to come back from like that and then perform better than – you don't see that very often, you know, because he had a big peak. He had the belt. He was phenomenal. And then he lost a couple. Usually you don't see anybody, as we're seeing now with Connor. Yeah, he came back and, you know, beat Cowboy. But then, you know, again, this last fight with a performance that was, you know, somewhat subpar for him. Once you come off that peak and come down the mountain, it's very hard to get back up. And Max did it in amazing fashion.
I agree. And you know something else I had to share for this one? I don't know. I haven't heard a whole lot of podcasts talk about this, but it has been on YouTube and it has been discussed a couple of times on ESPN. And let's just have fun for the sake of it. Everybody wants to think they've figured out every reason why Connor would fall off the top of the mountain. But I have one more small element to throw in there. I believe there was a distraction. And here's what I mean by that. Let's just play with the gimmick for a second here. Let's just say you're Conor McGregor and you are interviewing with ESPN. You're on Fight Island And all of a sudden, you look out the window and you say, there's a guy out there skateboarding. I think that's Max Holloway. The distraction of a skateboarding Max Holloway had to have had an effect. Now, I still think that's a cool move, that Max Holloway stays behind in case something happens with COVID, willing to jump in on a couple of days' notice. But, of course, he's bored being inside. He's able to socially distance. He's out there skateboarding, and Connor sees him from the window. I wondered if you caught that interview or know a little about Max Holloway's background in skateboarding.
No, I didn't. I caught that part of the interview when somebody had mentioned that on another show. But, no, I didn't know much about his background. But yeah, to see, I'm sure if we kind of look out and see somebody just kind of being free and easy and being like, you know, hey, bro, you know, I'm here.
It's one of those, it's highly unlikely that has anything to do with it. Yeah. It's just a fun side note. But yes, Max Holloway does have a background in skateboarding, but it's just kind of one of those, well, I still love the fact that he was there and willing to wait if something happens with the pandemic. Any fighter that would do that in the time we're in now, I really respect him for that. And there's something while we're rolling with gimmicks, I have to throw this one at you, because we're looking at, I don't want to call it a debacle at the lightweight division, but we sure are trying to piece it together and go, who can go with who? Because any of them work any time of the day. And also we have this hang up with Khabib that we're weighing up. But let me throw this one in there. We know what happened with Michael Chandler. I can bow to you and say I should have never, ever doubted Michael Chandler's abilities. All I've told people in the past is I wondered if he was content with being the flagship, and if there was an opportunity, he'd take it. And sure enough, he did. And we had him preparing for both Khabib and Gaethje at the same time, which people don't think that's a big deal. It is. Oh. It's a huge deal to be ready for both of those guys. But I watched something happen that people just are not discussing. Yes, we have a performance of a lifetime from Michael Chandler against Dan Hooker. But if you notice, Michael Chandler did his flip off the top of the cage at the end. Guess who else's stick that is?
Didn't look good when he landed.
But it hasn't looked good when Justin Gaethje's done it a couple of times too. All I'm saying is, if you want to get a build up for a fight, all he has to say is, hey, Chandler, you're stealing my thunder, kid.
There you go.
I mean, you get where I'm going with that one, right? I mean,
Andre said that. Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't even piece that together, that's Gaethje's kind of signature thing, until you said that.
But it also has happened in professional wrestling. You and Gabby have watched the 80s where Andre the Giant would step over the top of the rope. Big John Studd tried doing that, and he about annihilated the guy for doing that. I'm wondering if Gaethje were to do that with Chandler, can you imagine? But, man, again, I want you to have to take a minute on that one. You can school anybody that's listened about Chandler. You and I have followed him for years. I'm thrilled he's in the UFC. I'm thrilled that he has this iconic moment. He is riding the lightning bolt. Your take on Michael Chandler at this point in the UFC, take it, buddy.
I mean, I think he's in a fantastic position. I was very, very concerned for him that he might fall the route of, you know, and he still could. He's had the one fight, but, you know, we saw Ben Askren, who for years was in Bellator.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Tour, and then one FC was the what could have been guy, because he was never in the UFC, and then he came over, had that win over Lawler, and then, you know, the loss that took him out and retired. But Chandler, phenomenal shape. He's younger than Ben was. His wrestling is phenomenal. In that division, I think he's in a prime spot. Even if he doesn't get himself a title shot, or he doesn't get the belt, I think for himself and his family, he's in a division at a prime time financially. Connor's still there. Dustin, obviously, is having a resurgence. He's stellar. Max, Gaethje, if Khabib come back, I'll tell you what, to see Khabib in there against Chandler's wrestling, because Khabib's not a real big striker, and Chandler can strike, but the you know, All-American, the high-level wrestling back of him, I think that's a phenomenal fight. I think Chandler is a much better wrestler than Gaethje, who himself is a good wrestler, and put up a fight against Khabib. I think that's a match that they're not talking about, to me, that's very intriguing. I think if anybody in the division's got a shot to pull out one on Khabib, it's Chandler because of his wrestling background.
I agree. And
because he has he's had a little bit of time off, but he's still in phenomenal shape. He showed that. He made weight. He looked phenomenal on the scales during the fight where he was the alternate, which to mentally be able to go in there knowing that there's not a fight for you, it's just a what if, to put yourself through the weight cut and the training to be in that position, that says a lot more than people are giving him credit for, just to do that as an alternate. And now to come back and have a performance like that against Hooker, where people were, giving Hooker the win in the later rounds, it's amazing. I think he's in a fantastic position. I think the division is ripe for, this eight-person, kind of round robin of some incredible fights where they're all going to make a lot of money. And it's going to be maybe some of the highlights of their career, especially if, Nate Diaz comes back and gets down to 55 and he gets in the mix there. I mean, he'll scrap with any of those guys. Him and Gaethje would be a great fight. But I think it's a great position for Chandler. And I think, luckily, the division is right for him where, he's going to get some high-dollar fights regardless of who he fights. And, after the career he had in Bellator, I don't know what he made over there, but it's well-deserved. I wish he would have gotten over here sooner, for his longevity's sake. But I still think he's got plenty in the tank. And, he's got a legit shot to make a run.
Every way I agree with you, man. That's the thing about it is that, it's fair to say, like you were mentioning, that most fighters that come from Bellator or ONE Championship and come into the UFC, it's more common that their first debut match is not their best performance. And we were just wondering, is this going to be a factor for Chandler? And it certainly wasn't. So he proved anybody that had any smidgen of doubt wrong with the guy. I'm glad y'all are listening, Blockhead Nation. I wanted this guy's technical analysis for everything we're covering. I do more of the fun stuff. I talk you into the building, but we balance each other out pretty well with some fun little facts in between and all this. And people want to count out his weight cut for two guys. The last time I remember seeing one of these, it's been a while back, but I remember in the original Ultimate Fighter, Bobby Southworth was ready to step in because Forrest Griffin had a cut. So he was prepared for one guy in between these two. This is Chandler getting ready for both Gaethje and Khabib at the same time. And yes, he didn't have to, but the mental ability, the weight cut that goes with this, nobody can say anything. If you do, you're just an armchair expert that knows nothing about what these fighters truly go through, and you don't have a right to
mentally be ready for two such opposing styles.
Yes.
Khabib's sambo and ground grappling, his smothering grappling, and Gaethje's just standing back alley brawling. For Chandler to be such mentally prepared and to be willing to, if he focused, because Khabib was clearly, supposed to be the better, tougher opponent, he could have focused solely on the sambo and the ground fighting and then have something happen to Khabib. And now he's got to fight Gaethje and he didn't prepare for the 15 minutes of straight striking. So to be willing to do that tells you everything you need to know about his character and his heart, just unparalleled. And we see the videos, you've seen Chandler train. I mean, everybody trains hard, but nobody. I mean, look at the guy. He is
slamming medicine balls and doing backflips and all the other incredibly ridiculous workouts that he does. No, you're right. I hope that wasn't cutting you off. It's agreeing with you on every way. Because, it's still that idea that we had in our mind. We had just watched Dustin and Dan Hooker put on possibly fight of the year. We knew it was going to be close between Joanna and Zhang and him and maybe even Davidson and Moreno at the end of the year. It was a really close call between all three of those. I would have been all fine if it went either way, but we're all expecting, because of what Dan Hooker can do, for it to be in the first round. Now, I have to segue that because I don't know if you saw it, and this is something you understand as a guy who has done wrestling in the background. You have that background of wrestling, boxing, BJJ. You know when you see a wrestler taking his shoes off on the mat, that signifies something very special. That is his retirement match. Everybody in this crowd stands that knows what's going on. They're applauding him. It's an emotional for some people. Then they move the shoes and move on to another match. Well, Dan Hooker did something interesting. He took those gloves and threw them into the cage. Now, I don't know if that's just him having a temper tantrum or saying it's a retirement. Thoughts on Dan Hooker doing this? Because another thing, if you're an MMA fan listening to this, you know when they put their gloves in the cage, then that's a signification that we're not going to see them for a while, or this is a real retirement. Yep. And most of them just don't. We're starting to take that now with the grain of sand. Thoughts on Dan Hooker throwing his gloves in the cage?
I think it was more of an emotional reaction to him being so caught off guard and getting stopped so quickly. It was probably the last thing he expected. you know, maybe at the moment he was probably like, to hell then, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But I think it was certainly just an emotional reaction to turn around and throw him back in the cage. Yeah. I doubt it's the end for him, but yeah, it's probably just.
That's kind of where we are. You know, we've seen Randy Couture do it in the light heavyweight division. Now he went back to the heavyweight, didn't return. Yeah. We've seen Tino Ortiz blatantly lie about it, leave him in the cage. We've seen Alexander Gustafsson get frustrated and take him off. And now we're wondering if he's back in training camp again. So it's kind of, as MMA fans, we take that a little bit with a grain of salt. We're going, do you really mean it when you say you're retired? But I just wondered if you had some thoughts on just Dan. I think we'll see him again. I don't know when. But either way, let him have some time off. Let him get his break.
Yeah, I think in his performance, as you said, with the Poirier fight before, it was so good. It's not like he's had a string of, like Cowboy, he hasn't had a string of four or five bad fights where everyone's saying, hey, maybe it's time. I think this just caught him off guard, and he just didn't expect to get whooped so quickly.
Exactly. So I'm fine with Dan Hooker taking the break. I mean, he's such a dangerous guy anyway. I just think we'll see him down the road. It's fine. It's just one of those, we need to start realizing that the gloves need to be taken with a grain of salt these days. Now, we've been building up to it for a while. I don't mean to cut you off. We agree on so many topics. It's so fun to talk to you. We've been itching to talk about this now. I am going to shut my mouth and let you discuss UFC 257's main event, Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor. Take it, my friend.
You know, I was shocked. I was with the masses where I really thought it'd be probably a late first round stoppage for Conor. I thought his striking, you know, it's just unique enough and he was just too good. I know Dustin is much better fighter, much improved from the first time they met. But I also thought that was going to be in the back of his head. You know, once you lose to somebody once, you know, that's always going to stick with you, no matter how good you get against everybody else in the world. The fact that somebody beat you, took you out, that, you know, that doesn't just go away. So I thought that was going to play a factor. And, you know, Conor looked phenomenal in the Cowboy fight, took him out in the first round with that very unique move with the shoulder and, you know, came out of nowhere and did that. I thought we were going to see a different Conor. Now, he didn't look bad. He didn't come out and look sloppy and just get beat around and lose. But it wasn't the Conor that anybody expected. Right. Is he done? I doubt it. He can still draw a ton. He made great money. You know, whether he steps over and, you know, and fights the Jake Paul and does some nonsense, or he goes with Manny, who knows? Because of his drawing power and his earning potential, that's possible. But, you know, it's sad right now for Poirier. I mean, he's still getting his respect, but a lot of it is being talked about the demise of Conor and not the resurgence and the, you know, brilliance of Dustin. Dustin is in a different class than he was the first time they fought. He's phenomenal. I think he wants a shot at that undisputed belt, and I think that's where he's going to go. But, you know, it's always fun to watch Conor, but, you know, it wasn't the outcome we expected, we hoped for. I hope he does stay around in the cage and doesn't take these random stupid side fights. And, you know, I hope he gets back to focus. I think, from all accounts, he has been training pretty hard and focusing without too many distractions. You know, he's much more humble now in the media days and the weigh-ins and stuff like that. He's not the argumentative kind of bombastic doofus that he used to be. But, you know, as a fighter, that civility, maybe that's not always your friend. Maybe he's better staying the Nate Diaz, the middle finger up, and just me against the world mentality. But with two kids, you know, $200 million in the bank, a side business, the whiskey brand that's just doing phenomenally well and everything else, it's got to be hard to be a nose to the grindstone, blood, sweat, and tears every day in training type fighter when, you know, that's the life you've got to go home to. So, you know, to me, it doesn't mean that he's distracted or he's not trying. I just think maybe that edge and that ability to push yourself to that next gear just isn't there anymore when you know he's not on the welfare system anymore. He's not living in that dingy flat in Dublin, you know, as a plumbing apprentice trying to fight in the evenings. He's not that anymore. He's made it. He's overcome that. He's got the money. He's got the family. So you just don't have – maybe he doesn't even realize he's not reaching that gear, but he just might not know how to do it anymore because, you know, he doesn't have that burning inside that's forcing him to. So he's in a tough situation, but – you know, I hate the way people discount the greatness that he had before because of, like, this loss and the Khabib loss. People that may not have watched 2 or 3 or 4 years ago don't realize the phenomenal run he had and the performances he did have to get to where he was. They just see the two or the 1-2 guy now that beat Cowboy and lost to, you know, Khabib and Poirier. And these people are just talking about how he's, you know, a has-been, and they're all talking. He was a phenomenal once-in-a-lifetime fighter for a period of time, you know.
And you know, that kind of has the – yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just saying he kind of has something that Mike Tyson had. Most people only know who he lost to because he beat everybody. You know he lost to Buster Douglas. You know he lost to Evander Holyfield because he cleaned up everybody else in their division.
Yeah, he's remembered now for losing to Lennox Lewis, biting off Holyfield's ears, and being a funny guy in The Hangover. You know, unless if you're under a certain age, you don't realize the absolute stone cold killer he was for 5 or 6 years, where you paid $60 for a pay-per-view to watch him come in and walk back out in 37 seconds.
Indeed.
I mean, people forget that. And I hope that doesn't happen to Conor. I hope his legacy is lasting enough that even if he would come back and lose the next one and retire for good, that that's not what people remember. People remember the taking out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds, the just rolling through Eddie Alvarez, who at the time had put on a phenomenal performance to get the belt and was, you know,
and hold two in world, the air at the same class. Time.
And yes, and to beat, to knock down Nate Diaz and win that fight, you know, I just hope that's not forgotten in the grand scheme when it's all said and done, because he, you know, if he takes another clowning fight, like I said, with a Jake Paul or does something else, I don't want his legacy to be a gimmick and not the phenomenal fighter that he was during his peak.
I like how you word that, man, because there's two things I have to say here. Every time that we have podcasts together, you always segue into something that's coming up on my arsenal. So I'm going to bring it in a second, but I will say, I feel the same way about Conor. I'm not going to deny what he's been. He's been the spectacle. He's been the golden goose for so long. And his presence is kind of like, you know, when people know nothing about professional wrestling, they're like, oh, it's that thing Hulk Hogan does. People know nothing about the UFC. Oh, that's that thing Conor McGregor does. That's where we still are at this point. But I will say, I don't want him to fall off the same way you mentioned here. I won't be sipping any proper 12 whiskey. I'm going to sit back with my root beer floats, and I'm going to also have myself a little of that Dustin Poirier hot sauce, mostly just because I usually pull from the underdog. Yes, I am going to be disrespecting KFC with that Louisiana hot sauce. I'm thrilled you know what that reference is. Not everybody does. Oh, yeah. They don't all know the DC video. But you have been segueing this whole time into the fact that I turned my ESPN app on. I go home and watch ESPN Plus, and I am putting my head into my hands, because this really is becoming a reality. Jake Paul finishes off an NBA player, all of a sudden believes he's something, and now he's about to fight Ben Askren, the same dude who was undefeated at one championship and Bellator, actually took exchanges from Robbie Lawler, who could knock out a horse, and you seem to think that you have what it takes just because you've hired Jorge Masvidal. Maybe there's a psychological edge you think you've got here at this point. But YouTuber, hello, you're about to face a guy who could easily decapitate your head. And we all want to discount. We want to just forget all about Ben Askren. But maybe you have another perspective on this. Help me out on this one, Brother Sin.
No, I mean, you're right. It's absurd. Jake Paul's whole argument is, you know, he took out one pro athlete. Nate Robinson is a retired, call him has-been, 5'9", you know, second-tier NBA player. He was not a fighter. He's not a combat athlete of any type in his first fight.
Yeah.
So big deal, you knocked him. I mean, that's nothing. Yeah, and for him to – it, you know, and part of me gives him a pass because I know he doesn't believe 90% of it. It's money.
Yeah.
It's a money-making gimmick.
He's brilliant.
If I thought he really believed that – yes, if I thought he really believed everything he said, I'd have a lot less respect for him. But part of me just understands that he's doing what he needs to do, much like a Conor did in years past, you know, with the raucous behavior to increase his paycheck. And I get that is in the business aspect. But, yeah, I don't think he knows what he's in for with Ben Askren. I mean, people only remember you for your last, you know, your last fight. And that's what he's going off. Ben got kneed by, you know, Jorge and a freak thing that could have taken out anybody in any fight.
Just
happenstance. And Ben could have won that fight 9 out of 10 times if they redo it again.
Yeah.
It's just that one thing, and that's what they're going off of. And, you know, for Ben's sake, because of the career that he had and the phenomenal amateur wrestler that he was and with the Olympics, and I hope Ben comes through and just steamrolls him and cleans him up. So his last remaining legacy will be, you know, walking out hands raised and like as the, you know, the actual athlete and combat warrior that he is. So
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, brother. It's one of those, the people I feel bad for is Nate Robinson, man. I mean, it goes back to Teddy Atlas. He screamed about this. He screamed about it on his podcast and on Instagram that this is not good. This is terrible for the sport. This is terrible for Nate Robinson, who should be remembered for his slam dunk contest. But yes. This is what he remembered him for. It's terrible. And then if you add to it, you're right. Ben Askren falls into the annals of history because of the flying knee that now Jorge is able to ride the lightning on. But we forget about his one championship run and able to step into the cage with people from Bellator and get W's. Let's just forget all that, throw that away, shall we? But again, when it comes to actually marketing yourself, sure, you're the best out there. I'll give it to you. But yes, deep down, that is personally exactly what I want, is to see Jake Paul get silenced. And a guy who's already done it, I'm going to share this with you, Brother Singh, because you may not know. My friend on the podcast, Smiling Sam Alvey, did this wonderful Instagram that he added. He was doing one of Jake Paul's videos trying to call out Connor because he said, I just came off the biggest event in the history of the sport. And then Sam Alvey's like, oh, that fight with Mike Tyson. And then he goes, Connor, you're scared. He goes, no, he's not. Then he calls out Dana White. Dana, you're scared. No, he's not. But there was something he mentioned on there because he said something about Dustin Poirier having an Instagram with less watchers and listeners than his dog. He goes, so you're going to tell me that after spending a lifetime of telling people that size doesn't matter, Dustin Poirier's Instagram does? It was one of the most beautiful lines I've ever heard from Sam. And I have, you know, no matter what his fight career happens now, I respect him so much. I had to share that story with
Absolutely.
Him. And now we kind of get into a little bit of the selfish plugs on this point, buddy, because you have a YouTube page. At this point, you have some videos to put out for your business. And we're going to make sure we have those links up on the blog today. But I got to ask you, because the little redhead girl is dying to hear you more than once a year. You have a Blue Yeti mic that you can blow the dust off of any time. Is there going to be more than just a few visits at the brick wall where you might pick up the podcasting game again?
I've very, very much been wanting to for a long time. You know, when Joel and I did it, I very much loved it. Joel and I were two very, very different, uniquely varying personalities. So that made for good entertainment, but it made the behind the scenes keeping it rolling a little more troublesome than one would hope, but doing this for me is something that I very much need to get back to. I love to talk. I love to entertain, even if it's only entertaining myself. I love conversation, and to me, I'm at a point now. I just turned 40 2 weeks ago, and as cheesy as it sounds, I'm going through a little bit of a my own midlife crisis where I need to be something more than the sitting at the desk. I mean, you know, I've got my four kids, my family, which is all consuming and amazing.
Nurse, but there needs to today be is some, my birthday. I'm 40 years old. I want to look at the ocean, please. I'll quit.
Yes. And there needs to be more to Brother Sin than just, you know, full-time caregiver, which is amazingly important, and I give it my all. But
of course,
there also needs to be something to me, and I'm trying to figure out where that's going to be in the next stage of my life. And you know, and getting on the mic and being able to talk and to do this is, I think, is going to be a big part of that. Now that we're through the last year, when I thought many times about hopping back on and getting things rolling, my feelings and opinions about many of the topical and worldly issues, though important and, you know, could have been good to get out there, I didn't want to go down a path that I wouldn't have been happy with after the fact, because I let emotion and things get too much involved and have me saying things that I didn't like. And just, it was too heated. I had a very firm stance and belief on the issues and how I thought that they were going and should have gone. But now that that's all passed, I think we can all step back and take a little bit more of a breather, and I can, you know, not feel like I have to talk about that kind of stuff, because it's not coming up in every other conversation in my daily life. It's moved on, and now I can talk about more enjoyable things and how Calvin is far superior to Chuck and Linus and you know, and little Lucy. You know,
I laugh to hold my
tongue. We can have that conversation and enjoy it, because we're not worried about rioting and civil unrest.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, you're right. The
because
dust
we know
is
of the two animals, Hobbs is far superior in every way than a dog who thinks they're a World War II fighter. Yeah, you know, Hobbs is a talking tiger. Tiger's out.
A tiger could devour a flying ace, sure, but also let's forget about Joe Cool, who can run up a tree. He's gonna have to put the effort in. I'm with you, dude. And yeah, like I said, it's gonna be nice when you get back out there, because once again, the little red haired girl loves to hear you. I've always loved having you on, and I'm just thrilled that the itch is still there, man. And whenever you're ready, if the time for podcasting seems to be back on a boom cycle again. It's not only the podcast audio side. People are drifting more towards the lives, they're drifting towards, you know, video content, but you can easily turn that into audio and have your downloads. So it'll be a nice little three-way that you can end up doing down the road when you're ready, prepared, and you know, the Rocket Nation will always support you. Even the YFB network will allow you in once you hit 10 episodes, man. So I have to bring this in now because I want to know your depiction, and then I'll come on the back end. I said a phrase at the beginning, and you kind of popped, but the audience doesn't know what we're talking about. This is mutter talk for them. So can you walk us through?
Hoss.
Can you walk the audience through the phrase, what's the money on it, Hoss?
So that phrase originated, you know, it was made worldwide and famous on the Chael Sonnen and You're Welcome podcast. And it came from a story where Chael Sonnen and the great one and only American gangster.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Joel were driving somewhere. I don't remember their destination, but they had passed, I think, a house for sale, or a house that Chael was interested in. And it appeared the owner was outside and doing some work or something. So they pulled up, and instead of getting into the normal conversation about the home and for sale in the particular, Joel just hops on, "Hey, what's the money on it, Hoss?" in his brutish caveman-like demeanor that he so eloquently likes to purvey at all times.
The curtsy to the godfather, Joel Supernaut. And it's all meant in respect, but you're right. That's exactly what happened. Was he picked him up one day, and they were driving past the house that had a great view of Westland, Oregon. He just kind of said, "I wonder what that house is worth." And he just said, "Pull up, I'll ask him." I go, "Okay, I'll get to find," because the guy's out in the yard working on it. So he's going to ask him, surely, in normal English terms, what is the property value? Do you have this on the market?" No, he rolls the window down and yells to a total stranger, "What's the money on
money on it, Hoss?"
And he's like, "Huh?" And he said, "I pulled away because I was so embarrassed until this day." But that shows that, you know, sometimes people have their own different style of speak. And, you know, you and I pick up a few things here and there, but, you know, it's just in fun talk. Even my buddy that's Jay Baby that lives down here somewhere, this guy's been on Chael's show. You know, I still don't forgive him for that. But either way, he had his moments and a few phrases between him and Chael that were unforgettable if you're a true MMA diehard fan. But I had to bring that up just to bring up good memories, buddy. It is so good to have you back on. Before I let you go back and be with your beautiful family, is there a message that you want to send out to the listeners tonight for the Blockhead Nation? Anything, if they heard nothing else from you tonight, what would you want that to be for the listeners?
Just be kind to each other. After the year we've had, everybody just needs to look to their left, look to their right, and just be kind to everyone. We are all one nation, one people, differences aside.
Yes.
I just don't want my children or anyone else to ever have to grow up and see the situations that we did. Luckily, they're young enough that they're not really going to understand it. And, you know, I hope that it never becomes relevant to them again. So
they're very happy to say the Pledge of Allegiance, our nation, man. You're doing well on that one.
Yes. Yes. I just want us as a nation to move on and come together again, and everyone to be proud of who we are and where we're from, and to embrace the rest of the world, not to be xenophobic, not to be, you know, exclusionary, but to be proud of who we are, but then to use that for the betterment of society. You know, we got too much going on. And as I get older, you know, I realize that one day is coming sooner rather than later, where I'm just going to cease to exist here in the earthly form. And I just got to hope that the world is a better place when I leave than when I came into it. And I just hope we can all take that message and that mission to heart.
From the philosophies of Montesquieu to Thomas Jefferson to Brother Sam, we are all pursuing life, liberty, and our own happiness. And we all strive to do that for ourselves and our family. And also, as JFK once said, we all breathe the same air. And I give that out to you. Thank you so much for your message tonight, Brother Sin. It's great to have you back on. I really appreciate that you were so willing to come back on and have a moment with me after taking my 2-week hiatus to grieve. It means a lot that I can get back in, not only into podcasting, but have you alongside me. And you're welcome back on the show anytime.
Same time next week.
Okay. That might end up being the case, as those that come in tonight, you know how it works at the end of the show. Every Saturday, you know what to expect. We'll see you next week. Same blockhead time, same blockhead channel.